Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to this deep dive. Today, we are immersing ourselves in a truly foundational work, I think it's fair to say. Audre Lorde's Sister Outsider.
Oh, absolutely. Foundational is the right word. It's a collection of essays and speeches from 1984, but it feels incredibly current.
It really does. It's just a powerhouse, isn't it? Really defining what political liberation could look like.
Exactly. And think of it less as, you know, just a historical document and more like an active blueprint. Lorde gives us this roadmap for liberation, and it's centered on something quite radical.
Right.
Which is embracing your whole self, your complexity, your differences, using your internal personal power as the actual engine for political and social change.
And that's why it feels so timely, I think. Because Lorde, writing, what, 4 decades ago now?
Yeah, around then.
She was essentially defining concepts we're still grappling with, like intersectionality, this idea that our identities, race, gender, class, they don't exist in silos, do they?
Not at all. They overlap, they interact, creating these unique layers of experience. And Lorde lived that.
So if you're feeling kind of fragmented, maybe a bit overwhelmed by today's, let's face it, complex political world,
Lorde offers clarity. Our goal here really is to get into her central strategy. How do we stop seeing our differences as, I don't know, liabilities?
Things that divide us or make us vulnerable.
Right. And instead see them as the source of our collective power. That's the revolutionary shift she proposes.
Okay, so to really get the power of the book, we probably need to start with Audre Lorde herself, born in 1934, just an absolute force.
Mm-hmm.
And she gave us her own identity statement, didn't she? Which kind of acts as the thesis for everything.
She did. She called herself a Black lesbian mother, warrior, poet. And that wasn't just a list. You know?
No, it felt like a political declaration.
Exactly. It was rejecting that pressure to pick one thing, to say, I'm primarily this. Society wants you to compartmentalize.
And her authority, her perspective, it came directly from that lived experience, right? At that intersection.
Completely. Child Caribbean immigrants, a lesbian, often in interracial relationships, a mother, a cancer survivor. She wasn't just thinking about these things abstractly.
No ivory tower theorizing here.
Not at all. She was articulating the reality of living at the crossroads of all these different forms of marginalization.
And that wholeness, her refusal to choose, am I Black or am I a woman? That became the foundation of her philosophy.
It did. Because she argued that when you insist on your full self, you suddenly get this incredibly clear view of how different oppressions actually overlap and reinforce each other.
So it becomes obvious that, say, sexism and racism aren't totally separate issues.
Right. They prop each other up. And that means liberation for one group has to mean liberation for all groups. The systems holding us down are interconnected.
Which gave her this really unique viewpoint, didn't it? Being kind of an insider and an outsider in almost every community she spoke to.
Mm-hmm. That tension is palpable.
Yeah.
And it fuels Sister Outsider. The book itself collects 15 speeches and essays written between 76 and 84.
And it's not just one thing. You described it as a blueprint, but it feels like more, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like a survival manual, a political treatise, and honestly, kind of a spiritual guide all rolled into one.
Wow.
And the core idea, the central premise, is unforgettable.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot achieve real, lasting change using the tools and the logic of the very systems you're trying to dismantle.
Okay, that's huge.
Yeah.
So if you can't use the master's tools, as she famously put it, what are the new tools?
Well, that's the journey the book takes you on. It starts internally, looking at the need to find your authentic voice, understand your deepest feelings.
And she even talks about poetry as revolutionary, right?
Yes. And then it moves outward to critiquing social structures, figuring out how to build coalitions.
So it connects the personal and the political directly.
Absolutely. She makes this powerful case that individual acts of self-definition, just naming your truth, claiming your experience, are inherently revolutionary acts. It covers so much ground.
Like what?
Well, transforming silence into action, redefining power through things like anger and the erotic, we'll get into those, and a really necessary critique of feminist movements that sometimes ignored race and class.
Okay, let's dig into some of those key essays then, starting with that idea of finding your voice. Poetry is not a luxury. It sounds maybe a little surprising for a political collection.
It does, but only if you buy into that old idea that feelings and art are, you know, frivolous extras.
Secondary to the real work.
Exactly. Lore just completely flips that. She insists that, especially for marginalized people, poetry is a vital necessity.
A necessity? How so?
She sees it as the bridge. How can you imagine a new free world if you can't even articulate your deepest feelings, your dreams, your unnamed fears, and injustices?
Ah, okay. So poetry gives you the language.
The language of freedom. It comes before the specific political action, in her view. It helps you envision what you're fighting for.
That makes sense. And that leads directly into another really famous piece, doesn't it? The transformation of silence into language and action.
Mm-hmm. And this one has such urgency. She wrote it after a health scare, confronting her own mortality. You can feel that weight.
And the core message is pretty stark.
It is. Brutally honest, really.
Mm.
She says, "Your silence will not protect you."
Ugh.
Yeah, that hits hard.
It's a sobering truth, isn't it? Her point is, look, we're vulnerable either way. Whether we speak up or stay silent, there are risks.
So you might as well speak.
Precisely. Choose the path that, while maybe riskier in the short term, is ultimately more empowering. Speaking your truth becomes a political act. An act of survival, even.
And community building, too, right? Because when you speak,
you find others. You realize you're not alone in that experience. Isolation breaks down, and that's where coalition starts. Silence only helps the oppressor. Okay, so from voice, let's shift to her ideas about power, which are, well, pretty radical, starting with uses of the erotic as power.
Yes, and the first thing to do here is separate Lord's idea of the erotic from, you know, just sex or sexuality.
Which is where most people's minds go immediately.
Right. Patriarchy reduces and trivializes it because it's purely about the sexual act. But for Lord, the erotic is much, much broader. It's this deep wellspring within us.
Of what?
Of creative energy, profound knowledge, personal power. It's that capacity for deep feeling, for intense satisfaction in anything you do with commitment.
So it could be the joy you feel when you solve a complex problem or connect deeply with someone or create something beautiful.
Exactly. It's that life force, that deep sense of alignment and satisfaction. And her political point is that oppressive systems work by suppressing this erotic power.
Oh.
By disconnecting us from our feelings, from our bodies, from our own deep knowing. They promote burnout, make us distrust our intuition if you're cut off from that inner compass.
You're easier to control. You don't know what you truly want or need.
Precisely. So tapping back into the erotic, reclaiming that deep feeling, isn't just about personal well-being. It fuels joy, resilience, and sustained political action. It gives you the energy to keep going.
That makes sense. And that focus on challenging oppressive systems leads right into arguably her most famous essay title, "The Master's Tools Will Never Dismantle the Master's House." We hear that phrase everywhere now.
We do. Sometimes without the full context, maybe.
So what does she mean by the master's tools?
It's a direct critique of any liberation movement that ends up mimicking the oppressor's methods. The master's tools are things like exclusion, hierarchy, competition, refusing to acknowledge or value difference.
Can you give an example from her time, how she saw it playing out?
Sure. She spoke very directly to mainstream white feminism of the era, when feminist groups centered only the experiences of white, middle-class, heterosexual women.
And ignored or marginalized black women, lesbians, poor women.
Exactly. They were using the master's tool of exclusion. They weren't trying to tear down the flawed house. They were just trying to get a bigger, better room within the same old structure.
Right. It wasn't fundamental change.
No. Her point is, you need fundamentally new tools, new ways of relating, built on mutual respect, and genuinely embracing difference if you want to build something entirely new.
Which is a perfect segue into age, race, class, and sex. Women redefining difference. This feels like a foundational text for intersectionality as we understand it today.
It absolutely is. Here, Lord explicitly calls out the mythical norm.
That default person again.
Mm-hmm. White, male, young, thin, heterosexual, Christian, financially secure, you know the drill. Everyone else is measured against this impossible standard and defined by their deviation from it.
And society teaches us to react to difference in basically three ways, right?
Yeah. Ignore it, try to copy the norm, or distort the difference.
But Lord says, no, that's completely wrong. We have to redefine difference itself.
Radically redefine it, not as a problem or a barrier, but as a resource. She calls it a fund of necessary polarities, between which our creativity can spark like a dialectic.
Okay, fund of necessary polarities. Spark like a dialectic. Let's unpack that a little.
It's beautiful, isn't it? A dialectic is basically a constructive tension. It's where two different, even opposing, but necessary ideas or forces meet, and that friction, that interaction, creates something new. A spark of insight, creativity, truth.
So difference isn't something to be smoothed over or tolerated.
No, it's the engine. It's where the energy, the creativity, the potential for real change actually lies. Homogeneity is stagnation. Difference is dynamic.
Wow. Okay. And finally, in this section, we have to touch on emotion again, specifically anger, in the uses of anger.
Yes. And this is crucial. Lord gives us permission to feel and use righteous anger, but she's very careful to distinguish it from hatred.
What's the difference for her?
Hatred, she says, is about destruction, just wanting to obliterate something or someone. But anger is different. She calls it a grief of distortions.
A grief of distortions.
Yeah, it's a response to injustice, to things being twisted and wrong. And because of that, anger is informational. It tells you where the problem is. It clarifies. It motivates.
So when someone tells a marginalized person, don't be so angry, they're not just asking for politeness.
Yeah. They're asking them to suppress vital information, to ignore the signal that something is deeply wrong. They're asking them to participate in their own oppression, essentially.
So Lord insists, use that anger. Recognize it as legitimate fuel. Convert it into focused energy for change.
Absolutely. Don't let it consume you into hatred, but don't discard it either. It's a powerful tool for clarity and action.
Okay, so if we pull all these incredible essays together, what are the core messages for us listening today?
I think three main things really stand out, and they're still so relevant. First, this idea of intersectionality as a creative force.
Not just acknowledging difference, but seeing it as a resource.
Exactly. Think about it. If you ignore the different perspectives in your team at work or in your community group or even in your family, you're not just being, you know, not inclusive. You're actively limiting your ability to solve complex problems.
You lose vital insights. Homogeneity makes you less effective.
Totally. The second big lesson is about radically redefining power within. This comes from her ideas on the erotic and anger.
Moving away from power over others.
Right. And towards valuing our internal landscape, our gut feelings, our deep passions, our righteous anger, treating those as valid sources of information and energy for action. It's power from within. Power is energy, not domination.
Okay. And the third?
It's her relentless focus against fragmentation, the demand that we define ourselves rather than accepting the labels society tries to stick on us.
Bringing your whole self to the table.
Yes. Stop compartmentalizing. Stop asking, which part of me is acceptable here? Lord shows us that personal authenticity isn't separate from political effectiveness. They're deeply connected. You can't fight for wholeness out there if you're fragmented inside.
And Lord's way with words, her poetic style, means these ideas really stick, don't they? There are so many memorable lines in Sister Outsider.
Oh, absolutely. Lines that just encapsulate huge ideas, like the essential warning. The master's tools will never dismantle the master's house.
That's the call for real revolution, not just tinkering around the edges.
Mm-hmm. Then there's that urgent call to action. Your silence will not protect you.
Just cuts right through the fear, doesn't it?
It does. And the reframing of diversity. Difference must be not merely tolerated, but seen as a fund of necessary polarities between which our creativity can spark.
Seeking out that spark, not avoiding the tension.
Exactly. And finally, reclaiming feeling in art. Poetry is not a luxury. It is a vital necessity of our existence.
Bringing creativity right back to the center of life and struggle? These aren't just abstract ideas, though, are they? Lord intended them to be practical.
Absolutely. They provide a framework you can actually use today, whether you're navigating workplace politics or personal identity questions.
So, how might someone listening apply these insights right now? Let's think about personal integration.
Okay, so instead of walking into a room, a meeting, a family gathering, whatever, and asking yourself, okay, which parts of me do I need to hide here to fit in?
Which we all do, let's be honest.
We do. Lord challenges us to flip the question. Ask instead, how can I bring my whole self, my full reality, into this situation? Even just asking that question is a shift.
It moves you from seeking approval to claiming your own space. That feels like the first step she talks about.
It is. It builds self-respect and ultimately power. Then think about organizations using her critique of the master's tools.
Right. So next time your company or your activist group starts talking about, say, diversity and inclusion.
Ask the hard questions. Are we genuinely trying to redesign the system? Are we changing the power dynamics, the assumptions, the culture? Or are we just trying to add some diverse faces to the same old flawed structure that demands everyone assimilate anyway?
That's a really sharp lens to apply. And finally,
practice constructive engagement with difference. This is hard work. It means building the emotional stamina to sit with discomfort.
To not shut down when conversations get difficult because people have different experiences or perspectives.
Exactly. Build coalitions based on shared goals, yes, but honor the differences within that coalition. Don't demand that everyone erase their unique experiences for the sake of a superficial unity. Mm-hmm. That's using the master's tools again.
Wow. Okay. Reflecting on this, what really struck me diving back into Sister Outsider was that seamless blend. Poetry, raw personal story, sharp political analysis, it all works together. It's not dry theory at all.
No, it's fierce.
It's fierce, it's loving, but it's also incredibly rigorous. It's a call to live more courageously, more authentically. That's what I take away.
For me, the most powerful, enduring lesson is that link between the self and the collective. Liberation starts within. It starts with that radical act of self-definition, of embracing your wholeness.
And that's not navel-gazing. It's the foundation for effective action.
Precisely. We have to move beyond just asking for inclusion in systems that are fundamentally broken. Lord pushes us towards the much harder but ultimately necessary work of building entirely new ones.
Ones built on difference, joy, truth, the things she centers.
Exactly. And Sister Outsider gives us some vital tools for that construction project.
It certainly does. A truly essential read. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.